Hi, folks. Welcome to A Different Direction. We cover stories of the strange, document the weird, stuff like that. I'm Dave.
I'm Diana.
And today, we're talking about episode 24 of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. and Baby Makes Three. Before we start, if you want to reach out to us, you can reach us on Twitter at @DiffDirectionPod. You can also email us at differentdirection@tgifrk.com. I do have one message from the Freaks on the Message Board.
Okay.
Our friend Chris, right, knows us about the Stagecoach episode.
Okay, hello, friend Chris.
Hello, friend Chris, who wrote, I think the thing that stands out the most for me is Timothy Leary's performance, which reminds me a lot of Anthony Geary's performance as Philo in UHF. He was like, for those of you who don't know, UHF was like a Weird Al movie where he runs a small TV station. Philo is the guy who does like a really creepy, like, Mr. Wizard-style science show.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it's like, it's very goofy, ridiculous lines delivered in absolute deadpan. It'd be easy to write that off as, oh, he's basically playing himself, but playing yourself is still acting, and he does a great job of saying his lines in a believable way while simultaneously winking super hard at the camera. And...
oh, that, like, the LSD...
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty amusing, actually. I think It was really clever. Mm-hmm. I feel like this show is fascinating. The choices that the show makes, and just very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. With that one specifically, I realized after he said that, I was like, yeah, it feels to me like Timothy Leary playing the character people imagine when they imagine the Harvard professor who studies LSD. Like, he's not playing himself, he's playing sort of a public idea of who he is if they don't have any idea who he is.
You mean like Neil Patrick Harris and Harold and Kumar?
kind of, yeah. Where he's playing Neil Patrick Harris, which is nothing like the actual guy.
Yes,
exactly. With a similar level of drug use, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So, writer on this episode was Tracy Friedman. Tracy Friedman has a total of 13 writing credits.
Okay.
And I'm talking individual episodes.
Okay.
Wrote one episode of this show, one episode of Murder, She Wrote, one episode of a show called Reasonable Doubts, four episodes of a show called Time Tracks, and a lot of people who've written on this show wrote on Time Tracks as well. Like, that one had two seasons, but there was a lot of crossover between Time Tracks. It's about a cop from the future coming after criminals in the past who've come back, like, who went to the past to hide out.
Sounds like they're really going hard on this orb idea in, like, several different shows. Okay.
Yeah. Four episodes of the show Flipper.
Oh, okay.
And one of a show called Freedom, which absolutely would fit in our whole idea of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I would just feel a little weird about it because it's about a group of people trying to, like, save the government after it was taken over by a military coup, or not a military coup, but just by a coup. And I'm like, I feel weird about a show about a coup now.
Mm-hmm.
Taking over the U.S. government.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, the director on this episode is Kevin Bright, who has a much bigger career in TV. So Kevin only did the one episode of Briscoe County Jr., but specifically did a whole lot of the show Friends. He directed 53 episodes of Friends.
Interesting.
And 19 out of 22 episodes of Joey.
Amazing.
Yep. Yeah. So, also wild to me that Joey...
I didn't know that Joey had 22 episodes.
Yeah, one, that it had 22 episodes, and two, that a director... It's weird to me that a director could have directed 19 out of 22 episodes and didn't do all 22.
Yeah, that's because Joey himself was directing the other ones.
That's possible. I don't know. I wouldn't know. But, yeah, and then, like... one episode of the show that Matt LeBlanc did after Joey.
Is this person, like, just Matt LeBlanc's friend?
I feel like that's probably... because that show actually went significantly longer, but he only did one episode, so I feel like he maybe just brought in because he was, like, a very regular actor, like regular director that worked with him. So he probably brought him in to like do a single episode. I wouldn't be surprised. Because that one went on like 4 or 5 seasons.
Oh.
And which I don't know anything
about. There's so much TV out there. There's so much TV.
Yes.
So much bad TV. And it's somebody's favorite show.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's just really interesting to me how much exists out there.
Oh, so that Freedom show I was talking about. When I was looking at it, the one that I said like could fit on our podcast, it's a main review that shows up on IMDb, and it's from like
it's from the director.
Maybe it's from like August of 2001.
Okay,
and it's like this show was just canceled, and I've been writing this network to try and beg them to bring it back. It has so much potential, there's so much to it. And I was like, I didn't even know IMDb was even around yet in 2001.
Yeah, when did IMDb start?
Good question.
What? Are you telling me you had that thought, but then just didn't even bother to get curious about that?
Nope.
No, IMDb definitely existed then.
IMDb's apparently been around since 1990?
Wow. Yeah. Everyone was dialing up into the IMDb.
It was a fan-operated movie database on the Usenet group rec.arts.movie. Movies. In 1990. Then moved to the web in 1993.
That's going
to
be on that thing where everyone was just boards and weird blocky text on a screen that looked like you're just chatting in DOS.
Right. But it was like on the internet starting in 1993. Like, it moved from Usenet to, like, the web in 93.
Google didn't even exist then. Did it?
No. So, okay, to answer your question. I did think to do that, but confused myself, because you'll notice when I was explaining it, I originally said the review was on Amazon. I looked up Amazon's history. Then realized I wasn't on Amazon, I was on IMDb. So I did think to look it up, but I looked up the wrong thing. So, anyway, that's why I had to just look it up.
Well, when was Amazon a thing?
Early enough that it could have been on that as well. Is all I'm saying. Anyway, regardless, like, that is a old review. That was written right after the show came out.
Do you think that person's still writing to the network to try to get it back?
I'm guessing no, but
I want to read this other person's other reviews on, I almost said Amazon, on IMDb. And then maybe we can do our podcast on those other shows. Okay. I assume they only watch shows and they're like right to the network and they're like, oh no, it's this one again.
Every time they start a new show, it gets canceled and they're like, dang it. Not again! You keep doing it to me.
They're just cursed in a very specific way.
Yep. It's like this one guy who became sort of the patron saint of that Jump the Shark show because he kept joining shows and then they would get canceled.
What?
Jump the Shark website. On the Jump the Shark website, which is the website that you introduced the idea of jumping the shark being when a show goes bad.
Happy Days.
That's where the origin of jumping the shark came from.
Okay.
But the website was talking about shows, like identifying the moment when a show metaphorically jumped the shark, where it did the thing where everyone goes, oh, okay, this show's dead. They're done. They're out of ideas and it's done. And I think it's Todd McGinley is his name. He was an actor who became sort of the patron saint of that because he kept showing up on shows in, like, the later seasons, and then the show would get canceled. And it's like, he's on plenty of other things that didn't get canceled right away, but it happened a bunch of times.
Okay. Was he in Happy Days?
He was not.
Well, no. Then, one, can't be part of it. Two, did they ever jump the shark? Did it get Buck Wild when he was on the episode? Like,
No, the idea is that, like, him
being
on... I
know what the idea is.
The show was the
But
decline.
That's not interesting to me.
Okay.
It would only be interesting if he was, like, a Tony Hawk that showed up and, like, jumped a shark.
Okay, usually it wasn't a stunt like jumping a shark that was assigned the show as jumping a shark.
It could be jumping a banana. I don't care what it is. You gotta jump over something.
Yeah, when did the show throw a banana? It's a sign it's on a decline.
Whoa!
Alright, anyway...
Sorry,
speaking
it
of
slipped
jumping
on
the
a
shark,
banana.
Speaking of jumping the shark, we got to get this episode back on the rails already.
I know, just cut a half
nope.
of this out.
Nope. Do we have content warnings for this episode? I mean, that was a setup, not a real question of did you have any? Hey, by any chance, do you have any content warnings for this episode?
I don't have anything specific other than... Maybe the whole episode.
Vague, overarching racism.
I mean, there's definitely, like, tropes, like...
Yeah.
I don't know.
This is a weird one.
This is a weird... Okay. I have two thoughts about this episode.
Okay.
Is that... I kind of thought it was actually a really good episode.
Yeah.
It had a good vibe.
Yeah.
It felt like this is... Briscoe going in the season two.
Uh-huh.
I was like, wow, I'm getting, like, just everything's good in this episode.
Uh-huh.
Except all of that.
Yeah.
It's... That being the main part of the, like, kind of caricatures of, like, Chinese.
It very much felt like white people writing a martial arts movie without doing any research. Where it's sort of like, here's what I think 1800s Asian culture looked like.
Well, I think it is based off other white folks writing about Chinese culture.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like to me.
Right. I very much so. I'm just saying, like...
I just think it could have been better.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
But...
But I agree... I had a very fun time with this episode while it's going, like, I feel like some of this isn't okay.
Well, the plot of the episode is very interesting. I'm also confused by Chinese warriors.
Yeah.
Because that was set
these
up.
These are ninjas. These
oh,
are ninjas.
They definitely are ninjas.
Like, ninjas, not Chinese, but these are definitely ninjas.
But are there not... Okay, are they not some kind of Chinese ninjas?
I don't know
the word would be.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying I'm going to use the word ninja a lot.
Yeah, no, I wrote ninja too. I was like, ninja,
that's what these guys
out.
Are. I definitely have all in caps. I have a look out all in caps on here because these are full on the Peaches video ninjas.
Yes.
And I am going to say ninjas. I know. It's the plural
I'm
ninja.
Also saying ninjas. You're only saying that for me.
I'm not. I mean, I am saying it for you. I'm not only saying it for you.
Okay.
Sometimes I make mistakes in a thing, which reminds me I need to mention a mistake. Sometimes I make mistakes in an episode and I want to cut in so that people know that I know the mistake. I'm doing it right now. I know if anyone's thinking, so, by the way, the plural of ninja is ninja. I do know that. I'm going to end up saying ninjas. Because English speakers say ninjas. It just happens. And that's what I grew up saying. That being said, these are Chinese people. They're not ninjas. You wouldn't use that word. They don't even use that word in the episode. But also, they're ninjas. Like...
Well,
I understand.
They're the shadow...
Shadow warriors.
Shadow warrior. Isn't that like a NES game?
Probably, yeah.
I feel like it is.
It very probably is.
I feel like there are so many games about ninjas.
Oh, yeah. Very,
but also
very
just
common.
Like fighting.
Yeah. Like, these ninjas use shuriken, which again, shuriken is absolutely a Japanese word, but I don't know any word other. The only thing I know to call it would be either a shuriken or a ninja star, which is again a Japanese thing. Like
I would have said like throwing star
or a throwing star. Okay, but I'm saying like every context
fidget
I know of
spinner.
It is still Japanese. There may be a Chinese equivalent, but I don't know it. It isn't what I associate it with.
We got to learn about Chinese ninjas.
Anyway, so vague, hard to identify racism, I feel like, in this whole episode.
We are not the experts to identify it, but we are pointing out that there is some problems.
Yep. Anyway, I guess I'll do the recap now.
Do the recap now. We've been talking for like 45 minutes.
Yep. Okay. We start on a Dixie Cousins musical number in which we learn that, you know how last episode, disco's being all weird together? They've decided to stop doing that. They're just into each other now. They're just officially into each other, and they're going to stop being aloof weirdos. Speaking of aloof weirdos, Pete Hutter's back. And he shows up, tosses Dixie a baby and bolts, and gets kidnapped by a bunch of freaking ninjas. So now Dixie, Briscoe, and Bowler, they just got a baby, and they go to the police, and the police are like, I don't know who that baby is. I guess you just have a baby now that you got to take care of. Speaking of babies you got to take care of, also Whip Morgan was there, so they take him out of jail. Back at the Black Lotus hideout, we meet Chan. He's the head of the Black Lotus, who has taken Pete and is doing some Italian water torture on him. You might know it as Chinese water torture. That was to make it sound more exotic. It was created in Italy. Anyway, Italian water torture is being done to Pete by this Chinese gang. Purely a coincidence, because Pete was supposed to kidnap the baby for them. And he was like, yeah, I did. Thought you were going to kill me. And they were like, okay, well, we totally won't kill you this time if you tell us where it is. And he's like, okay, here's where it is. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to let you go. And then they don't. Dixie, Briscoe, and Bowler decide to go just chill outside, knowing that there's like a bunch of ninjas around attacking people because of this baby. And what do you know? A bunch of ninjas attack because of this baby. There's a big old fight. Baby almost gets taken, but eventually Briscoe and Bowler manage to haymaker their way through all these ninjas. And the ninjas run off. They save the baby. Send it to stay at Bowler's place for a bit while they try and figure out what's going on. As we all could have guessed, since there's a Chinese gang involved in this, they're going to go talk to Li Pao. So they go talk to Li Pao and find out that baby is the emperor. No big deal. He's like the emperor or heir to become the emperor. It's hard to understand. He says the emperor, but that doesn't actually fit. Later, we find out there is an emperor. I don't know. He's going to be the emperor regardless. He's either the prince or the emperor or whatever. We also find out that this gang is called the Black Lotus. The Black Lotus is the one that killed Briscoe's mom. In retaliation for helping Li Pao quit when they went all evil. He used to run them, and then they went all evil, and he had to quit, and Briscoe Sr. helped him out, but that got Briscoe's mom killed. Back at Bowler's, Socrates has learned nothing from last week's episode, and because some government officials told him this guy he's just met, Chan, is cool and is the baby's father, brings him directly to Bowler's, where they're hiding out, and is like, hey, give the baby to this guy. He's cool. Some people who I definitely trust told me he's cool, and he's definitely cool. And Dixie, who, like, doesn't care about babies at all, you guys, gross, ugh, ugh, is suddenly like, this baby doesn't trust this guy. Doesn't give him up. So they run off, and apparently Chan didn't bring any of his ninjas along to guard the back windows, because they're able to just leave, and they make it all the way to the Chinese embassy, because obviously the shadowy Chinese organization isn't going to have anybody at the Chinese embassy except, what do you know, Chan's the ambassador, I guess? And so they immediately get captured, along with Briscoe and Bowler. Everybody's captured. They're all in dungeons except Dixie and the baby. Briscoe manages to get out, and while everyone else is also trying to escape, he manages to make it to Dixie and the baby. Everybody else escapes. Briscoe, Disco and the baby manage to make it to everybody else. They all escape. And wacky set of circumstances, Pete ends up with the baby, and he's like, wait, I was supposed to steal you. And he runs off, finally stealing this baby a second time. Runs off all the way to Sutter Creek, which has been, I guess, renamed to Hutter Creek. It's a town full of the slaves of the Black Lotus, except also been completely renamed for Pete Hutter. Every sign that says Sutter says Hutter.
Did you not realize that he did that himself?
Yeah, but I'm saying it's a whole town of people, and he just went to every S and crossed it out. And
yes!
I know. I'm just saying it's a weird... I know it's Pete. Pete's weird. I guess it's not that... I guess I shouldn't even overthink it. Pete's weird.
Yeah, why did you overthink that?
Because, you know what? Because
you overthink. It's okay. Let's move on.
You know what? If that had featured a single moment of just everybody looking at him weird while he climbs up on a ladder and paints a sign and just sort of says some weird stuff to himself, I'd have been like, ha, Pete. Just doing Pete stuff. But because it didn't show it, I overthought it. Anyway, Pete's ready to offer up the baby. All he needs is a little thing of a full pardon forever, $1 million, and a working Leonardo da Vinci helicopter. Obviously, they don't give that to him. There ends up instead being a big old fight between the Black Lotus people and the people of the town that the Black Lotus is enslaved. And Dixie runs off. Chan follows. Briscoe follows him. There's big old fights. Briscoe gets a snot beaten out of him, but then manages to trick Chan and toss him off a balcony. The day is saved, the baby's saved, and Diana gets her greatest wish for this show, as the Chinese emperor wants Dixie to be thanked personally and takes a slow boat to China straight out of this show forever. Never to be seen again.
I like Dixie in this episode.
I knew it! I knew it! I was like, as soon as I wrote that, I was like, Diana's going to be like, I like Dixie.
I know, because they did character development.
They did. They really did. I know.
But also, she definitely has to go to China. That's
obviously
her thing. Like, she has to go. She can do, like, file a claim over there in China.
Yep. And the thing is, like, she wasn't supposed to leave the show forever. If they had a season two, she would have been back.
They should have had a season two.
Yeah.
I am won over by the show now, which is great, because we have three more episodes.
We do. One of which is two-parter, so it's really only like two more episodes.
It's interesting because your recap was talking about them being like romantic and into each other, mm-hmm. and like Briscoe is, I don't know, enjoying watching Dixie's routine, uh-huh. like, oh, I'm so in love with Dixie. She's so talented. You've seen her do this a million times. I know. I know.
Well,
I think
there's one important difference is that she's singing it at him.
Oh?
Yeah. You see her repeatedly looking over directly at him when she says certain lines. He's reacting to that. It's not her show. It's the stuff that she's singing to him. That he's reacting to.
Also, Pete.
Also, Pete.
Pete, okay. Is there not a bouncer at this place?
I mean, probably not.
Well, I mean, how can Pete just run on stage? Why does Pete choose Dixie? Why? I don't know.
I think it's just a panic thing. He's just sort of like, the one place where I know somebody will take this baby and not just be like a complete monster. It's Dixie Cousins, and she's probably doing a thing at the Horseshoe Club right now.
But also is surprised to see Briscoe. Briscoe.
I love it. Every time he shows up, he has to say Briscoe.
Yeah, Pete has my heart.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just... also, his singing has become a part of the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
I mean, he's always been, like, since the pilot.
I know. So I really enjoy how when they later on are all stuck together in the fancy torture cave underneath the Chinese embassy.
Yeah. You know how embassies just all have dungeons and torture caves?
I'm sure there's a documentary out there. Well, I mean, I assume that Bly abandoned this cave when he went back to the future.
Nah. I didn't see one chandelier in this cave.
It had a staircase.
It had a staircase.
And was fancy and had a special dripping machine.
It did. That is true.
Anyways, Bowler complains about his singing.
Uh-huh.
And we know that Bowler has the voice of an angel.
Yes, 100%. Yes.
I feel like, just everyone had good chemistry together this mm-hmm. episode. Mm-hmm. I loved Lee Powell in this episode.
Yep.
There was just good energy.
Yes, I agree.
And so much happens in this episode, like, mm-hmm. 12 minutes in. Yeah. So much has happened. Yeah. It's just constant action, but also it's funny and mm-hmm. quick. And yeah. just, like, I love this idea that Pete's like, well, obviously, I stole this baby, but they were going to kill me, so now I have to give this baby to you.
Right.
And also, will you help me and protect me?
Right, yeah. I want to say one thing, because you're talking about the energy
yes.
and how everyone had good energy in this. Like, so, I've never been super into Whip Morgan. He's, like, fine. Like, whatever. He's just another person who's there, and, like... last episode I was saying, like, he was the most mature person when it came to relationships, but, like, I just...
Hold on, I want to say, like, they're clearly writing... This episode feels like they're writing, like, Whip in to be, like, coming back. Like,
yes.
This was going to be an ongoing thing.
Correct.
Yeah.
He is.
Okay.
He is in every episode remaining.
That... is strange.
I mean, so, there's only three episodes left, as we said, and one of them's a two-parter, but he is in the next three episodes.
Okay.
Because I had seen a trivia thing a few episodes ago that was like, this is the last episode without Whip Morgan.
Oh.
So, and he's been in the last two, and he's going to be in the next three.
Buckle up.
Yeah.
Everyone's favorite side character, other than Pete.
So, I will say, so what I was going to say was, so when they first run into Whip in prison, or mm-hmm. in jail, because there is a difference, when they first run into Whip in jail, they're trying to, like, bail him out, but they don't have enough, and so Briscoe, like, suggests playing poker to the sergeant. And,
of course, we know Whip's
like, great at poker, so he just completely takes him and...
I was going to say, because Whip wants to be bailed out.
Right.
And it's only like $50, but they don't have the $50.
Uh-huh. Or at least Bowler's not giving it up. Like, I got the impression Bowler had it and he was just like, mm-mm.
Yeah. Nope. And that's fair. But the reason that they want Whip out is because Dixie's like, I don't know how to take care of baby.
Right.
And Whip's like, I love children.
Right.
I love babies. I know how to do all these baby things right. that you need doing right now.
Yep.
So I suggest you get me out of here.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I enjoy that, like, I don't know what you were gonna say, but I enjoy that they said that thing about, like, poker, and uh-huh. then they had that, like, seat, like, kind of
the scene after the cut is the one that I was going to talk
about. Okay, go ahead then.
Because he comes out, like, Briscoe says to the sergeant, like, do you like playing poker? And then it cuts and you just see Whip, like, coming out of the cell, going up to the sergeant, and he's like, sorry about that, here's your, what does he say? He's like, here's your something back. Here's your badge back. You're going to need that. Here's your, you know, this. Here are your cards. You're going to, here's your cards back. Sorry. Oh, and then he reaches behind the sergeant and he flips out an ace and he hands from behind the sergeant's head and gives it to him. He's like, you're going to need that too. And I was like, the apology seemed real. Like, it was his watch. He was like, here's your watch back. Sorry about that. Here's your badge. You're going to need that. Here are your cards. And then he's like, and he like does like a magic trick to grab an ace from behind the sergeant, right? One, I just really liked the energy there. I was like, this is the most fun Whip has felt on the show.
Whip is fun in this episode.
Yes, Whip is fun in this episode. I really enjoy Whip's energy in this one. That's why I wanted to say that. You're talking about everyone having good energy. Whip's got great energy in this even. And I've never, like, Whip's always just sort of been there for me or annoying. He's driven the plot, but, like, there hasn't been a lot to him for me. I really like his energy in this. But also, last episode, we had a whole back and forth because you were saying that Whip was cheating. Mm-hmm. And I said I didn't. Nothing on the episode implied he was cheating.
Mm-hmm.
But when he reaches behind the sergeant and he pulls that ace,
mm-hmm.
I was like, okay, either the sergeant...
The sergeant was cheating.
Either the sergeant was cheating, was hiding the ace, and Whip saw it and knew that the whole time. Or that was Whip doing a magic trick to reveal the ace he had been hiding the whole time and revealing that he was the one cheating.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't figure out which it was. I couldn't figure out if he was actually plucking the card from behind the sergeant or if he was doing a magic trick to reveal it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious what you think.
Well, I did not think it was a magic trick. I definitely think it was just a reveal, like, oh, also this, you're going to need this.
Right. So you think the sergeant was cheating?
I think someone was cheating. I don't know who.
Okay. That's the question I'm asking. Because he was either doing a magic trick because he doesn't have it visibly in his hand.
Okay. No one is doing magic in this. No one is doing magic.
A card trick. He's either doing a card trick to reveal a hidden card that he had. Okay. Or to show that he saw a hidden card the sergeant had.
I don't know, and I, in all honesty, can't believe we're still talking about this. Well,
I was just curious for your opinion, because you're the one saying he was cheating last episode.
Obviously, Whip's cheating, regardless of whose ace this is.
Okay.
You didn't ask that part.
I was asking that part.
Well... No, asking... you were asking something else very specific, and I don't have the answer to that question. I don't know who was cheating in this game.
I'm saying if the sergeant hid the card, he's
Whip
cheating.
Whip is cheating.
So you think Whip is revealing that he's the cheater?
No, I think Whip is a cheater, and he does a thing, and I don't know why. The end.
Okay.
Someone cheated.
Yeah, I was trying to,
I don't know.
I was just trying to ask
you to guess.
I
don't know who cheated in that. But it doesn't negate the fact that Whip's a cheater. It's all I want to say, okay? All right.
Okay, fine. That's fine. That's
okay. Fine. Okay. It could be anyone. We know not to trust a sheriff. And we know not to trust Whip Morgan.
Okay.
Because he even lied about his baby skills.
He did lie about his baby skills.
I felt very upset by that.
Uh-huh.
I did not like that. I was like... Yeah. What person says they love children, but then I don't want to think about it?
Someone who needs you to believe that to get bailed out of jail.
That's not okay.
No, it's not.
It's not okay. Whip, this isn't okay.
It's really not. It's
don't
not.
Lie. Just be honest. Don't cheat anymore. Whip.
Agreed.
Whip, you can just... be a good guy, like Crisco, who cheats all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Big old cheater. Alrighty. I don't know where we're going from that.
Lots of good energy.
Yeah.
Lee Pow feeding these pigeons. He's got names for every one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was like Chi-Chi and Cuckoo and like, or Coco. It was Coco.
It was Coco.
I don't know why I said Cuckoo because that's the kind of bird. It's Chi-Chi and Coco.
I'm Robin.
Robin. I just enjoy it. I enjoy this a lot. I enjoyed him feeding these birds.
Yeah, that was nice. Ow. Okay. So I think it's very weird later on when Dixie says her repertoire doesn't include lullabies.
Uh-huh.
Of course it does. Of course it does. No one... Okay, one. I don't even know where or how I learned lullabies, but I knew them.
Uh-huh.
As a child. Mm-hmm. I could have lullabied my own self to sleep. And also, why can't adults be lullabied to sleep? That's not fair. Like, if I could afford, like, a string quartet to come, like, play me a nighttime sleep song, yeah, I would. Or even just, like, some lo-fi beats.
I'm saying, like, you're just describing lo-fi beats. People do that all the time.
They don't get the lo-fi beats band there to, like, play it live.
Well, of course not. Because then you got, like, people in your room, and, like, that's weird. Trying to go to sleep, and there's just some people in there.
Just like, let yourselves out.
Yes! They also live in my special lo-fi beats room. Okay. So... But I also knew that I was just like, well, that's a lie.
Uh-huh.
But that also came... This was all tied into this other thing. Like, also, like, before Dixie says that, like, memorable line of, I don't know any lullabies. Okay. Bowler gets, like, peed on because he's, like, avoiding the baby this whole time. And is like, oh, maybe the baby's actually cute. And then, like, the baby's diaper falls off. And then it's just like...
I mean, look.
He's being peed on. Like, why?
You can't, because is you this, can't have...
Is this because of, like, that Ted Danson movie?
Well, that's one that I was thinking of, but I was just gonna say, it's because you can't have a TV show or a movie in which people who don't usually take care of babies are taking care of babies, a baby, and someone doesn't get peed on. That's how it works. Like, that is... I'm pretty sure that's, like, a law. That, like, if your script involves people who don't take care of babies taking care of a baby, someone gets peed on.
A baby law?
Yeah. It's written into, like, the...
Code of Babies?
I was going to say, like, the MPAA, as part of their rating system, they're like, this is an X unless you have this baby pee on someone. We can't allow this to show. Babies pee on people. That's how it works. If you're not used to...
Are they a dog?
That's just how it works. That's the formula. You're going to have a baby in a scene with somebody who doesn't know
the
how to take care of a baby.
The formula has nothing to do with pee.
It does. Where do you think the water for the pee comes from? From the formula. But it's just a rule. It's part of standards and practices. Nothing.
I hated it. I hated the scene, and I'm gonna take a whole star off the episode for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, this baby's name's Jesse.
Uh-huh.
After Uncle Jesse.
Famous Elvis impersonator.
Also, the Beach Boys. I mean, could be worse, honestly.
Yeah.
So, is this like Jesse the Kid? It's a Billy the Kid, but Jesse the Baby? Babyface Jesse.
Jesse James?
Oh, you think?
Like the actual, cowboy? Yes. Because he's like, that's a good cowboy
name.
But
also, this baby's supposed to be Chinese this entire time. Did we mention that? I mean, yes, because you said it's the heir of China or something.
Yeah, heir to the emperor.
I didn't think that this baby looked Chinese.
So, I definitely didn't write it down.
I didn't write it down either because I couldn't. But everyone says the episode, like, this is a Chinese baby.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah, as soon as the sergeant said it, I was like, okay.
I also felt like that's a weird thing to say.
I mean.
It's a baby.
It's not weird in the sense that, like.
This baby
you're
belongs
trying to identify,
China.
Well, specifically, you're trying to identify whose baby this is. That's important information.
Okay. They might not be able to tell. I guess they know the baby is Chinese, but they wouldn't say Chinese. It would say Asian, right?
I mean, in San Francisco in the 1890s,
they
would probably
say anything.
They would probably say Chinese.
Dixie's just got a brand new baby.
No, I'm saying if you know the baby is Asian, if you can recognize that, you'd probably say Chinese in San Francisco in the 1890s.
I don't like making any of those assumptions.
No, so that's based on both the fact that there was a very significant Chinese population there, and also various weird laws at that time, and like all kinds of bizarre things related to like nationalism and racism and the
great
all kinds of other things.
Remember almost when Bowler got peed on by Jesse? Alrighty. Okay. When the ninjas come out and attack them, when they're just like pacing the open streets a nighttime town,
mm-hmm.
and the baby like carriage just like runs away from that. Doesn't this happen in some other kind of movie?
Yes, The Untouchables. There's a scene like very much like this in The Untouchables or Ghostbusters 2.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, in The Untouchables, it's falling down some stairs. In Ghostbusters 2, it is rushing away because it's being possessed by slime. Also,
it seems that the baby carriage... Okay, what is going... Okay, I know that we talk about Red Dead 2 as, like, historical. I'm gonna say, you can see from the carriage if there's... maybe a baby and maybe a lady chasing the baby. And you might want to be like, whoa!
It's dark. There's no streetlights.
So what are they, a ghoul? Are they just like a ghost carriage and they can't see? Like,
I mean...
Look, we got that lantern upgrade in Red Dead 2 and it does actually seem to make it harder to see.
At times, yeah.
But you have a lantern... Mm-hmm. And that means you can see when the bear is right in front of you.
That's true. Well, I also...
And also, I found it really weird. She, like, pushes the baby out of the way, and I'm like, oh, no, the baby just spilled over. Mm-hmm. And then
just accepts death. She's finally...
She's dying for the baby.
She knows she saved the baby, and she is welcoming the angel of death, finally. She has been waiting and is finally accepting, like, finally he's here
but
to
just
take
like
me.
A real angel, an angel stops the carriage dead in its tracks and saves Dixie.
I mean, the carriage doesn't stop. Briscoe stops her, but I do.
I know, it's just referencing. As referencing your angel.
Oh. Even
that's
that
too
angel,
hard to explain.
Even that Unsolved Mysteries angel moved that woman partly out of the way of that ice cream truck. I'm pretty sure she still, like, lost a leg or something.
I thought she just broke an arm.
Nah, it was worse than just a broken thing. It was. I think she lost some limb. Anyway, it's a weird old Unsolved Mysteries thing that I love. Because it's so ridiculous. We don't need to talk about that.
I just found the runaway baby scene strange. I also think it's strange when it's revealed when Briscoe's mom is killed by the Black Lotus because Dixie says, why did this never come up before? Being the audience.
Right.
And it just never came up.
Yeah, it just wasn't important.
No.
Honestly, I agree, but also this episode does this a couple of times, and I kind of don't mind where they're just sort of like somebody actually brings up a ridiculous thing.
No, I like it too.
Because Whip does the same thing, because at a certain point when Briscoe like whistles for Comet.
Yeah, yeah.
And Comet just sort of appears, and Whip's like, is he just on call 24 hours a day? And you see Briscoe and Comet sort of talk, he's like, it's not worth explaining to them.
Oh,
and it's like, that's
also
a valid question.
Comet, okay. When Bowler asks Briscoe what's going on between Dixie and him, he goes, I'll let you know right after Comet.
Yeah.
Meaning he's better friends with Comet than Bowler?
Well, I mean, okay. To be fair, He just might be more likely, Comet might just be more likely to be around to find out.
Well, he rides on Comet.
Right.
That's not weird. It's a weird best friend relationship.
I mean, look, if your best friend also was super strong and happy to give you piggyback rides everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, 100%. Exactly. Yes. Yes. Hi, I'm looking for a new best friend, super strong, that can carry me everywhere.
Yeah, I'm saying, like,
I'm not saying I don't want to exercise. Take me to, like, some stairs and I'll run up those. Uh-huh. And you can just watch. But then you can carry me home. Thanks, uh-huh. Bestie. There's a lot of details in this episode.
There are, yes.
Like, do we want to talk about Lee Powell more?
Sure, you got stuff to say.
We do, but I was thinking about, like, the scene where they go to Bowler's hideout. Uh-huh. This all just so much happens in, like, the first half of this episode. Uh-huh. And they go to Bowler's hideout, even though Bowler just got things reupholstered.
Just got his sofas reupholstered.
Aren't they, like, brand new? Also, you're never home, Bowler. Like, what do you...
It's funny because my immediate thought was, like, I don't know, he's got all that little leak.
Wow.
It's gonna get smashed up by some ninjas, but no ninja fights happen. I 100% expected some ninja fights at Bowler's.
No, that's just where you find out about the dragon tattoo on the baby.
Yeah, this is a... quite the tattoo.
I also feel like when you hand a baby over and it starts crying, that's just a normal baby thing.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know baby etiquette. Uh-huh. And obviously, I saw that person show up and I was like, this is not the right person.
Well, yeah, because we'd seen that guy.
Yeah.
So we knew it wasn't the right person.
But excuse you. They have some new facial hair. It could be somebody else. Also, this whole episode is very Star Wars to me. And if you weren't thinking that the heir of China, strangely, like, this baby is Baby Yoda, is it not?
I mean, look, it's a bounty hunter trying to protect a baby.
I know, right?
Like, so a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I felt like we have, like, Lee Powell here, who, like, kind of know, like, is, went from, like, leading this group of good to, they went to the dark side and I didn't want to go.
And he hid out.
And he knows shadow warrior technique fighting styles.
Yep. Yep.
Plus,
I've seen Big Trouble in Little China. He's got some powers that he's hiding.
Is he in that movie?
Yeah, he's like the main villain in that movie.
But wasn't he also in another movie you just saw?
We just watched Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Go and see
he's like the main character's dad in that movie. But that's an incredible movie. Yes.
Okay, so like he's in everything.
Yeah, also, oh, he's in a ton of things, yeah.
But I just feel like this whole thing is very Star Wars. Uh-huh. Even though we didn't know about Baby Yoda at the time.
Uh-huh. Probably inspired it.
Probably inspired it. Like, the orb is pretty much everything Star Wars.
I mean, the fact that we can, the only explanation for a lot of stuff on the show is the orb. The only explanation for a lot of stuff in Star Wars is, I don't know, the Force? And is the orb not the Force in this show?
The Force is kind of like rooms to go, right?
Rooms to go?
I don't know. I was trying to, like, think of the most unlikely thing and hope that you would carry it with me. Dropped it into the ocean. Which means I'm not getting my deposit back.
I'm sorry.
How dare you? That was a primary yellow couch I got from Rooms to Go. All right. The pistachios.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I absolutely
The pistachios. Bowler so had happy. Some fancy.
Then his Lalique Oh, wait, the leak's the frosted one. What was the not frosted one?
The other one.
Yeah. The other one.
Romanique.
Anyway, the one that isn't frosted.
And,
yes.
And I just like bowlers like, where are my nuts?
Yeah. Yeah, stay off. Stay away from my nuts.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, when, okay. When they catch up to, I almost called him Wade. Whip.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
To Whip. Mm-hmm. He's like, give me my nuts back.
Yeah. Yeah, give because
him. He has see, him in the hat.
Yeah. Well, because, okay, when Socrates and Chan first show up at Buller's house to claim that he's the father of the baby, you see Whip just eating some pistachios out of this, like, crystal bowl thing. And then,
are they shelled? They have to be. Are they?
No, I think he's pulling the shells off and tossing them back into the thing. But then when Dixie gets all suspicious and claims that, like, the baby's diaper needs to be changed, she's like, hey, Whip, come help me out in the other room. And Whip just dumps the entire bowl of pistachios into his hat and, like, walks up to follow her. And I love that, like, in the next scene at the Chinese embassy, he's still got his hat full of pistachios.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, and then Bowler takes it and just dumps the hat, like, into his pocket to, like, get his pistachios back. But also, as is established, that's the only reason they're able to track them.
I love that.
Yeah. Which is a great point. Like, how do you track somebody on city streets?
With pistachios.
Which then
no
begs the question.
Questions.
Uh-huh.
Bowler.
Oh, yeah. Except I am about to.
I just said no one.
I know. But also I'm about to. Because later, when Pete gets the baby and runs off, they were eventually able to track him on the dirt roads to Hutter Creek.
Mm-hmm.
How do they find their way to the dirt road? How do they track Pete to where he joins a dirt road? Because they established they can't track him on city streets. How do they get to that point that they know where to track him?
Why do you do this? We're trying to have a fun time.
It is a fun time. I'm just saying, if they hadn't established it earlier, that there's no good way to track them on city streets, I wouldn't even be thinking about it. But they just do it off screen, so it's okay. They don't even talk about how they get to that point.
Well, they're barely in the Chinese embassy.
Uh-huh.
Before everyone is, like, put in the dungeon.
Mm-hmm.
A thousand-year dungeon.
Right.
Where
by the scientist from Lost.
Chan is the scientist from
Lost? No. The guy who comes out and he's like, we're having a special soiree for the new ambassador. He'll be here soon. Can I take
it? Are you sure?
100%. Without question. I didn't even need to look it up. I immediately recognize this guy. He's the one who's on, like, the film that they find.
Yep. Oh, please. I remember. 100%.
I thought of another way to identify him, and then I was like, that's a bit of a spoiler. Beyond him being in there on a film. So I wasn't going to say it.
Okay. I like when... I like spurs, and a spur shows up.
Uh-huh.
It's a, you know, a standard cowboy thing.
Mm-hmm.
The spur is, right?
Sure.
We never see it featured, and here we go.
Yes. Whips, it's just sort of there.
New spurs.
Brand new spurs.
Gonna break them out of cave, mm-hmm. cave jail, cave, cave chains.
Yeah.
Can you, like, how did they put it in the rock?
So, essentially, you just kind of hammer the, like, a metal spike, like, real deep.
Wouldn't it slip out?
No, it's, I mean, if you hammer it real hard into some stone, you end up with just really hard to remove. You would have to break the stone around it. It's not easy to do. It takes.
I don't know. A spur can break through these chains.
Well, the spur is breaking the stone so that the spike can come out. So that he could then go get the key.
Oh.
He's breaking the stone around the spike that the manacles are attached to. So that the spike will come out.
Oh. I still don't know if that works.
It would.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Chan again and how I don't know if we ever talked about him, but he's talking about Baby Yoda and how they're so powerful yet so fragile. Why is Dixie not in chained up? Because someone needs to look at the baby?
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
I think that's...
And then, like, how he's like, I will tell you my entire plan, which is, I'm gonna go take this baby back to China and use them for collateral so I can get ultimate power.
Not even just collateral. They want him. They're going to puppet him. He's going to be a puppet king. And they'll be the puppet master.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's going to be the puppet master.
Yeah. Yeah. Villains love to monologue on this. Villains love a monologue.
Yeah. Yeah.
They love to just be like, here's everything. Here's my whole everything.
But also, there's also like this thing, a party happening at the embassy, just like Jumping Jack
for
Flash.
For the new ambassador, Chan.
Yeah, and Todd the caterer's there.
Todd the caterer is a weird moment in this episode.
Okay.
There's no reason Todd the caterer needs to know who Briscoe is. He just sort of shows up.
To be fair, he does not. He would know who Briscoe is from dime store novels. Two, calls him Briscoe Village. I found that to be funny.
Yeah.
But also, he would not punch Todd.
No.
And I was like, that, like, so when he breaks out of the, like, cave, mm-hmm. he does this thing to, like, pretend to be one of the waiters to, like, get in the party, I guess.
Yeah.
It
seems like he only punches him because they need unconscious Todd to signal the guards that something's wrong.
Well, they apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he apologizes for that, but it was weird. Oh, and then there is that person at the stairs.
Uh-huh.
Did you recognize that person?
No.
Okay. I thought I did, but, like, when Briscoe, like, is here, they're like, oh, you don't look like a caterer. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, yes, I've been getting that a lot. Here, hold these.
Right. Because he's not. So he's just sort of like, here, whatever. He doesn't care.
I'm sorry. If I'm at a party and somebody goes, here, hold these, and runs up the stairs in the area not for waiters, I think I will be finding the host of the party.
You say that.
No, I would be like the new waiter. I'm talking about an imaginary diner that would actually do something.
Okay. Because I was going to say, like, I feel like...
No, I've become the new waiter.
If somebody at a party... If a waiter at a party just handed you a big tray of stuff like that, you'd just be like, oh, God. Now I've just got this tray of stuff. I guess I just hold this tray now.
Yeah. I'd be the, like... 4 days later, still holding it. Let's not talk about me. Let's talk about Briscoe getting upstairs in that classic. This is really Jumping Jack Flash, heavily inspired.
Yep.
Oh, so is Pete upstairs?
No, Pete's downstairs getting water tortured.
No. When Briscoe... Oh, is when he's a waiter, is that when he's getting the keys to let everyone out?
He gets the keys, he unlocks himself, tosses the keys to Bowler, goes upstairs, gets the waiter outfit to go try and get Dixie and the baby.
Oh, right.
Because he wants to go after Chan, but Lee Pao's like, now is not the time, we need to save the baby.
Oh, everyone else is untying Pete.
Right.
And Pete, while Briscoe's upstairs.
Right.
And then Pete is not himself.
Yeah.
And thinks everyone is his Uncle Bob or his Aunt Shirley.
Yep. Yeah, he spent a lot of time in that water torture and like, that can legitimately do some real bad stuff to you. And
just having water dripping on you?
Yes. Over time, like, yes. Though apparently it's apparently much more effective if it's not regular, if it's sort of randomized times. Because if you can learn to predict it, you can learn to, like, ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's randomized, then you can't. Because it just keeps happening at times that you aren't expecting.
Oh, and you can never stop it, so...
Yeah.
Interesting. Also, whoever came up with that, what's your deal?
Yeah, I don't remember the name. I saw it first assigned to a guy in Italy in, like, the 1400s, or the early 1500s, and I didn't read a lot about it. All I saw was that, like, he apparently came up with a lot of different forms of torture. That's just one of them.
Okay, you do realize that just makes me more curious, sure. But also scared.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't want to, I didn't feel
this
like that level of detail was
my
important.
My favorite, now we're going to start talking about, like, torture devices.
Uh-huh.
You know, like the pear. Is that what it's called?
Uh-huh.
I hate it.
I hate it. I hate
it. Do you know why I can't stop thinking about it?
I can think of a number of reasons, but...
No, when I was in college, there was a bulletin board, and there were just medieval torture devices, like, you know, like, photocopied and pasted up there, like, oh, look at these fun facts.
Uh-huh.
We had a very gothy, like, RD that was in charge, or RA that did it. I don't know who. And that one stayed up there for a long time. And I used to sit desk and reread the bulletin board over and over and over again because we're just spacing off half the time.
Right.
And I will never forget it because I wrote about it. I can't remember any of the other ones.
Uh-huh.
Thank goodness. Probably because that one's just the most gruesome.
Yeah. Sure is.
So gruesome. Anyways, enjoy. Enjoy that fact and that story from my babyhood. Well, when I want to talk about when they're in the, they get Pete untied and they're all trying to, like, escape and they have to go through the sewer.
Mm-hmm.
But we haven't talked about, like, Lee Powell's, like, ability to kind of speak like Yoda.
Yeah.
Like, it's very, like, it's that mystical, like, I have some fortune cookie. It's, like, very kind of fortune cookie-esque. It's definitely, like, a reference to, like, a style of, like Confucius, I guess. And, like, philosophical thinking that is tied with, like, Chinese culture.
Yeah. Though go ahead.
I was going to say that I actually thought it was interesting because he came across, and I think this is a trope too, where you're like just wise. Like, but he paid attention to small details in the same way that, like, Bowler did or does in tracking. And it's like, well, what do you smell around you?
Right.
It's not me.
Yep.
It's a sewer. We got to go through there.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that.
Yeah. I also liked that because, yeah, he very much was doing, I'm like, this guy, this actor has been in roles where he said lines like that.
Yeah, I figured.
That were taken, like, were just sort of like, oh, he's the, you know, wise Chinese master who says these sort of things. And I liked that in this one. It was just sort of like, no, these are not meant to be ancient Chinese things. This is just me saying stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is just me. I say stuff like this. I you know, and I just, like, when, you know, he says a thing about, like, a frightened rabbit goes to the thistle bush when it's hunted, and Brisco asks if that's an ancient Chinese proverb, and he's like, no, I just made it up. It's pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I like that. Or even when, you know, even though we know fortune cookies aren't actually a Chinese thing, he's trying to say that, like, it's an old Chinese.
Oh, they do get, like, fortune cookie.
Yeah.
Like, because when you were talking about feeding the, like, birds at the park, he gets, I do like how he said they're stale.
Yeah, but he also says it's an old Chinese trick to put, like, between the sheets at the end of the fortune.
Oh, yeah,
and I was like, well, which I think is funny because it's like, it's sort of like, fortune cookies aren't an old Chinese thing anyway. So mm-hmm. saying that like it's an old Chinese trick is just sort of being like, no, this is just like a thing you do with these fortunes. Like we just, it's not an old Chinese thing. It's not any of that.
I like the one where you put like snakes at the end. Something about snakes.
I'm not familiar with that.
I saw someone doing that and I was like, that's good.
Interesting. I'm not familiar, but I'm curious.
Oh! Okay, so now we're finally, they escape the sewer, but also this is when we see Dixie, like, doing the lullaby.
Mm-hmm.
Like, after, well, I guess, like, I'm confused.
She's singing the lullaby when Briscoe rescues her. And Briscoe shows up yes. to rescue her.
You know what? I don't have scene cuts in my notes, so I get confused about uh-huh. who is in the scene.
Yeah.
But I was just like, why is she singing a lullaby? She can't sing a lullaby. And then Briscoe's like, I thought you couldn't sing lullabies. And she's like, I lied.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, of course.
Yeah.
But also, I like this whole thing is like
she doesn't.
I like when they acknowledge. No, I think it's a. I like that they acknowledge what the audience is thinking.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's not just a one-off thing.
Right. The lullaby thing is about her. Throughout this episode, trying to be like, I don't want kids. I don't have this maternal instinct thing. That's not my deal. That's not my jam. I don't. It's just like. It's not a thing for me. And then it turned out, like, it's definitely a thing for her.
Okay. I'm glad that you actually said that, because, duh, that's obvious to me.
Yeah.
And I realized that maybe that's not obvious, because we didn't say that out loud.
Yeah.
I mean, that's clearly what they were implying.
Right.
That's why I wasn't talking about that.
Right. But like,
Dixie doesn't want to be a mom.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to be involved in the baby caper happening. Right. She doesn't want to be helping the, like, Mandalorian hide the baby in the village.
Yep. I like the one bit. She's like, I think motherhood's an institution. I'm just not ready to be institutionalized.
I know. That was really good. She said it really, like, sassy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, good line. Like that line.
Oh, I like how she was singing the lullaby but also making that like rope out of the bed sheets.
Yep. She's ready to bust them out of there.
And I was just like, she is so clever.
Mm-hmm.
And she would do that for herself though. That's just how she is. There's a reason that like Briscoe and Dixie are attracted to each other, because I think they have like this like determination and like mm-hmm. confidence.
Yeah.
But that's the same thing that makes it hard for them to like settle down, be together,
because
that is not the lifestyle either of them uh-huh. want.
Which I have to say, I think is the reason why she's so much better in this. Is that like they're finally they've dropped the whole thing about like pretending they aren't into each other
mm-hmm.
and they're just like accepting it, and now it's stopped being weird. It's like just like it's okay for you to just be into each other. It's like shows just need that conflict. It's like you didn't have to, like, by creating that conflict, that's what made all of this weird.
I like this kind of, this feels more natural, even if like Briscoe was having those like kiss of the week moments, because mm-hmm. those always seemed weird, and maybe they were supposed to seem weird because he's never really into those people.
Right.
And also, you can just have a kiss with someone that is not indicative of mm-hmm. any, like, anything ever again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, how many people, like, have their first kiss and then never kiss anyone ever again? Like, at one point, maybe, sure, but mm-hmm. I would think no.
Mm-hmm.
You kiss a lot of people.
Right. I thought you were saying the other way. There's so many people that kiss one person and then no one ever again.
No, my point is that Briscoe kissing people didn't feel, it feels, they could have just done that from the beginning, but mm-hmm. I think they couldn't because America wasn't ready.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
Because I think there's something that reads as like not being trustworthy, but I'm like, Dixie isn't settling down either.
Right. Yeah. That's never been her thing.
Like, if they're going to be, like, together, they're going to be, like, long distance. How, mm-hmm. like, they're going to be together when they're together and apart when they're apart.
Mm-hmm. I honestly, I think we've even talked about it. If there had been a second season and it was, like, Briscoe was still having adventures and stuff, he could just had adventures with Dixie with him. Like, and it would make sense because she's the sort of person who would just be like, yeah, let's do adventures. Let's go.
Yeah.
Do adventures. And, like, that's all they had to do. They could have been doing that this whole time.
Oh, well. That's what they're doing right now in Briscoe Heaven. That's where a show goes.
Yep.
All of them go to Briscoe Heaven. Comments there.
Okay, I gotta say, there's a moment when the Black Lotus people show up, and, like, near the end, and Briscoe and Bowler pull the guns on them, and Chan's just like, you should know that to a Shadow Warrior, guns don't mean anything. And it's like, I'd probably try. I'd probably just be like, let's just try.
Actually, I'm gonna actually.
You just, actually, yep, uh-huh.
Think about Bly.
Uh-huh.
And their, like, ability to, like, stop bullets.
Sure. Bly has orb powers.
And so do the Shadow Warriors.
Okay, I'm saying I would probably try. I'm not saying it would work, but I'd probably at least, if I've got, like, ninjas with weapons.
If it doesn't work on a ghost, it doesn't work on a Shadow Warrior. I read that in the handbook.
Okay. I'm still probably gonna try to prove that. If, like, somebody's coming at me, trying to kill me with, like, a bunch of weapons and steal his baby and all this stuff, like, I'm gonna try at least once.
I have nothing to add to this. And I'm done fake arguing with you about it.
You don't have to argue. You could just be like, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't agree. I'm just neutral. I'm just like, okay, cool.
You don't agree that they should have tried?
No, I don't like guns.
Well, okay, but in this context,
they shouldn't have fought at all. They should have just talked about, they should have just had, like, a discussion and been honest with each other instead of just, like, stealing the baby. And also, no one person should be powerful enough to, like, take over the whole country. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if you want to be a puppet master so much, maybe get a puppet theater. Okay?
Well, what also gets me is that, like, in that same scene, Whip shows up and he's like, what if you're surrounded? And then walks into kick range. It's like, the benefit of the gun is that you aren't in kicking range of the ninjas. Like,
but he's got his new spurs.
They're not new anymore. They're all busted up from digging out.
Just one is.
Still, I'm saying, you don't get into kicking range with the ninjas.
How many times did Bruce Campbell get kicked in the face with that boot during that?
I'm going to say, probably not many, because what actually probably happened is, like, they do the wide shot of him kind of doing the toss, and then it cuts away, and it's just somebody, like a crew person with a boot in their hand, just kind of tossing it to him.
It's impossible to toss a boot. I learned that when I lived in Texas. It's like one of the classes I took.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Boot tossing?
Yeah. It's like, I mean, it's extracurricular. But you kind of, everyone learns it because it's just the thing you do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I was just watching a video. It was a Quarter Crew Stunt Person Reacts thing, and he was talking about his own, like, a scene he was in and, like, how it was done. And there's a point where this guy, like, kicks him in the, like, right in the throat. And so he's talking about how they did that. And he's like, they show the guy doing the kick in a wide shot. And in the close up, it's just a guy with a shoe on his hand. Like, with pants over his arm and a shoe on his hand doing the actual kick part to make sure he could control where it was going to go. So it looks like he's being kicked to the throat.
I don't. One, don't kick people in the throat.
Well, sure, yeah.
It's not okay.
Well, of course.
Also, I don't like being lied to in the movie like that.
Yeah, but
at least in Aeon Flux, I knew what I knew that it was going to be like a boot on a hand.
Uh-huh.
Who isn't kicking with their hands in that?
Yep.
Unless you're all feet, I guess.
I guess. I don't know if there were any people that were all feet as much as there were people with hands for feet. Person with hands for feet. I don't know. There might have been more than one. Anyway, anything else we should talk about in this?
Yes. Thing? Like, I was on track and then you, like, put a rock on the track and I crashed into it. There was that joke about parking horses.
I don't remember what the joke was.
I think Briscoe, Dixie says it's the Briscoe. It's after the like lullaby thing. Anyways, I just have in my note job parking horses.
Oh, yeah. Because she likes his uniform. And she's like,
yes,
I'm going to get you.
Yes, because he looks like a valet.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Oh, I had a whole thing about the Hutter thing. What if Pete wanted to be found and wrote his name on the thing?
Yes.
Because I can't figure out why he would cover it other than he was trying to not be found.
Because, okay, here's a theory going with what you're saying.
Okay.
Because he wanted specifically to be found by Briscoe and Bowler. And, you know, Bowler's a good tracker. He will find what he did, find that sign. And that means that then he could then give him the ransom note. Because they'll have access to those that kind of a ransom.
Oh, I forgot he was doing the ransom note thing.
A ransom doesn't work if somebody doesn't find you.
I love when he says, like, he's taking the baby, and he's like, I'll just take this pachyderm.
I know. I definitely wrote that down, too.
Oh, and then another Pete thing, that Bundle of Joy is a missing persona.
Uh-huh. Also fun. Very
interesting and unique dialogue from Pete, which is, no one else talks like that on the show, and I very much enjoy how distinct it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says a lot about his character.
Yep. So there's a specific thing that I wanted to mention that's a quote of his that where he's like, because, you know, when he finds, you know, that they found the baby where he's hidden it, and he's like saying that they better give it back or he's going to kill them. And then they aren't going to give it back. And he says, like, in the immortal words of Crazy Horse, Hoka hey, today is a good day to die. So that is actually a thing that is and was at this time commonly attributed to Crazy Horse.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that was a misattribution. It was actually a Lakota chief named Low Dog that used to say that.
Mm-hmm.
But this mistake is a very common one.
Mm-hmm.
But then I really liked right after that, Pete, he gets that shirk into the back. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, I hate being prophetic.
Oh, yeah. But he's not dead.
Of course he's not dead. He's died several times in this show. Yeah. He's not dead.
Pete's not allowed to die.
Right. Look, the IMDb trivia said that this was the last episode of Dixie Cousins. It did not say it's the last one with Pete Hutter.
So, who does Dixie slap? Pete Hutter?
Yes. She slapped Pete.
And then he says, oh, that reminds me of my mom?
Yeah, my dear departed mother.
That made me really sad.
Me too. If you didn't say it was comforting, it would definitely be more sad, but it's definitely pretty sad. Like, I'm like, I'm not comfortable with that line.
Also, Pete's piece had a name in the last episode. Remember that person, like, threw it?
Yeah.
But in his, like, grant of immunity letter, he's, like, called Pete's piece.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember. Yeah, did they give a name?
Yeah, like, he's calling for it in the field.
Yeah.
by the horse.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I just don't remember what he says.
Dave, you're the Pete. You're the Stan. You're the Pete Stan, and you're not coming through for me.
I mean, I could try to find it in my notes. I didn't write down a name. I just wrote that he's upset about it and he's yelling to it. I never heard him say a name.
There's a name in that episode. There's a name in that episode that is not... He doesn't say Pete's piece.
I'm sure.
He does call it his piece, but then it's like he's looking in the field and saying something.
I remember him saying stuff. I just don't remember saying a name. I'm sure he did. I just don't remember.
I don't know. We'll find out next week.
Oh, I was supposed to give a correction from last week's episode at the start of this one. So I'm going to give it at the end. At one point, we were talking about the movie Collateral came up because we were talking about the meaning of Collateral. And you asked if that was a Tom Cruise movie. It is. I said it was Mel Gibson. I was thinking of the movie Ransom. Collateral's the Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx movie.
I've seen Ransom because Smashing Pumpkins did the soundtrack. I don't remember the movie. Really.
All I remember is, like, Mel Gibson's kid got kidnapped.
Yeah. That's what happens.
Or there's also, I may even think of Payback. Maybe I was thinking of Payback, which is also a Mel Gibson movie.
Okay, the Collateral sorry. Is
Tom Cruise.
Do your... Oh, so...
That was the question.
Was it. Oh, okay.
You asked if it was Tom Cruise, and I said, no, it's Mel Gibson. Incorrect. I think I was thinking of Payback. Collateral is a Tom Cruise movie. You are correct.
Yeah. Okay. So they find the baby so they don't have to grant Pete immunity, which, because they totally weren't. And they right, go to.
And they weren't going to get him a helicopter, an air screw.
Yeah. I was like, what the? And then I figured it out. So when they go to the camp.
Mm hmm.
The Chinese immigrant camp, I guess. Mm-hmm. And Dix is like, it's that one.
Uh-huh.
Those people don't have any reaction. They don't say, who the heck are you? Uh-huh. We're watching this baby. They right. have, there's no resistance whatsoever. And I think mm-hmm. that was a real huge oversight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, couldn't they have said, like, oh, I'm not supposed to give this baby to anyone, or mm-hmm. I'm supposed to only give this baby to Pete Hutter, or some kind of something like they give somebody. It would have been nice if they gave them money or something.
Well, I kind of wondered if, I thought that too, and then I was like, I wonder if they just found this baby. I wonder if Pete just stuck this baby, in a corner of the camp, and those people just happened to go over there right then to check on it.
Mm-hmm.
So then when they show up, and go straight to the baby, they're like, all right, I'm out. I don't need to deal with this. Somebody's dealing with this baby.
Right, right.
That was my only thought. It's like, maybe those people had nothing to do with it.
I don't know. I found it to be strange.
Sure, yeah. I don't disagree.
I also wrote, I don't know how many hours in we are of this podcast, but 39 minutes into the episode, I wrote, Master versus Master Showdown. Because
which we don't see. It happens off screen.
Yeah, with Chan and Li Pao and...
Yeah, I was waiting to see them fight.
But it doesn't go well. But, I mean, because Briscoe has to step in. But then... Also is, super loses. And and then just is like, there's a window. And that's how I'll do it.
Yeah. I did appreciate that,
but I felt like, did Dixie run up there on purpose?
I think she was just trying to find a way to get away and chose the horror movie trope route of
it go seems up strange. Some stairs. I think Dixie's smarter than that. But also, when she gets the invitation to go with the baby, and they call her a golden angel, I don't think they would use the word angel, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Because I feel like an angel is like a Christian.
Well, you know what that might be? I feel like...
I mean, that's probably translated, but it feels like...
Realistically, I would say I almost believe that in 1893, they would have said a thing that would get translated to Golden Angel by some, like, because that's the what the person doing the translating was like, this means like angel or something. And it's like, no, if you actually knew what you were talking about, you'd know it wasn't that.
I don't think it got translated at all. Okay?
No, I'm saying I could see
a thing being
translated that way at that time. And be like, that's not...
I don't know anything about translation 1890s. I feel like there was very little of it happening.
Exactly. So I'm saying I could totally see someone saying that they said Golden Angel when, like, if you actually translated the same words today, you'd just be like, that's not at all what they said.
Also, when I think of Golden Angel, I think of honeycomb, like the candy, but also, like, you know, like powdered, like in a powdery form, but uh-huh. also golden grams. And uh-huh. then I'm like, honeycomb? But then honeycomb cereal is nothing like golden grams or honeycomb. And it's kind of just a disappointing thing. Anyway, Golden Angel cereal, I don't know what it is. Maybe you do. Wink. Okay. Look, if you want me, more me in this podcast, that's how I give me in this podcast.
Yeah, no, I'm all in, yeah.
When they're like Dixie leaves mm-hmm. to go, are they at the Westerfield Club? Are they at the Chinese Embassy?
They're at the Chinese Embassy.
Oh, because it super looks like the Westerfield Club. It
absolutely looks like the Westerfield Club. Well, like, when they leave.
Yes, like, yeah. At the end of the episode, like, when they kiss, and they have a cute disco moment.
Uh-huh.
Because I put, oh my god, disco.
Okay, so when they're inside, agreeing that she should go... It's definitely the Chinese Embassy.
No, but
embassy.
I mean the when one they're when outside, they're outside.
It looks like the Westerfield Club, but the Westerfield Club got blown up.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't think it's a Westerfield Club, but it sure does look like from the inside of the Westerfield Club courtyard. But that got blown up, so I'm guessing it's not. Or I'm guessing the show was not trying to imply that it was, but that doesn't mean it wasn't filmed in that same in the yard of that same building.
Strange.
Yeah.
But that is that's everything that I have written down as notes.
The one last thing that I had, which I found really interesting, because so much of this is what I would associate as being actually Japanese, because it's got ninjas and things.
Oh, when they say...
When Whip says sayonara,
uh-huh.
and Li Pao's like, that's Japanese, and then says how to say it in Chinese, and Whip doesn't even try. And like, here's the thing, I'm not going to either, because I don't know it well enough, and I will get it wrong. I just thought that was really interesting, because of the fact that, like, these are some ninjas. Like, this is a thing that I absolutely associate with specifically Japanese.
Okay, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Are the Foot Clan Japanese? I thought there were teen boys. I thought there were teen American boys.
The Foot Clan are led by Japanese people. In the original comic,
Shredder?
Shredder is Japanese.
Okay, I'm talking about the movie only.
Shredder is still Japanese in the movie.
Okay, and then he has other, like, head honchos. Where is Krang from?
Krang is from Dimension X.
Okay. Why is he involved?
I don't remember how he gets involved, but I just know he sort of partners up with Shredder.
Okay, that totally makes sense. Not really. I don't understand the cartoon.
Yeah, I don't remember how
they... Feel free to DM me. But I was just curious, because I thought they were all teen boys, and they're ninjas too, so like...
So in the cartoons, they're just robots. Except Shredder.
Obviously.
Except Shredder. Shredder is 100% a Japanese man in both situations, in both versions.
Okay.
Hiroku Saki? Or is he Splinter's master? I forget. Anyway, he's definitely Japanese.
Cool.
In the movie, they then come to America and they bring the Foot Clan to America, and then they're recruiting teen boys. So the teens aren't, most of them are not Japanese, but Shredder still is. And his second in command also is.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of them aren't. Anyway, but that's all. To answer your question.
I'm sorry that I keep asking more questions, which leads into longer and longer explanations, spiraling into other dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to look behind things.
All right. In that case, with that, this has been episode 24 of The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr. and Baby Makes Three.
Who was the baby? Just kidding.
And this is TJF Arcade saying, until next week, we'll be waiting for you, Brisk. A Different Direction is a TJF Arcade production. You can contact the podcast at diffdirectionpod on Twitter or email us at differentdirection@tgifarcade.com. You can also find information about everything that TGIF Arcade produces by following us at TGIF Arcade on Twitter. Thanks for listening.